Hey guys, I just want to address something really quick before this week's episode. This week we interviewed James Franco, who has some recent allegations against him. We recorded this episode a couple weeks ago before some stuff was brought to light. But right now, we're just hoping they're just allegations. And so we decided to run the episode, and we hope you enjoy it because it's a really great episode. It's a lot of fun. And with that, enjoy the show. The Yes and I Am podcast, the podcast where we learn about people. I'm Aaron Max, and today's guest I'm personally super excited about. I've been a fan of this guy for years. Ever since I saw you in Spider-Man, I think was the first time I recognized you. It was in the first Spider-Man movie. I was like, this guy has got it. I'm talking about actor, writer, director James Franco. How's it going, man?
I'm just so glad to be here. Thank you for having me, Aaron. This is a wonderful podcast. I'm just so glad. Thank you.
I just want to start right off the bat. I saw the movie The Disaster Artist recently. That movie was awesome. I just loved your portrayal of Tommy Wiseau, and like, it was just a great movie.
Stop it. No, honestly, can I tell you a secret?
Yeah.
That was just me and my buddy Seth Rogen, and we were just like filming like a fun little skit in the backyard. Yeah, it started as like I was impersonating Tommy Wiseau and he was filming it on his iPhone, and about 45 minutes into improvising the room together, we thought maybe this should be a movie.
Now, you and Seth, you guys hang out a lot outside of like making movies?
Oh, every single day. Seth actually has a spare room in my big old house.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
You know, I might not have even supposed to have been said that, because, like, I have a relationship, and Seth has a relationship.
Oh, you're currently seeing someone?
I am, yeah.
Oh, wow. Because you've been known to be kind of, like, ambiguous with your relationships and such.
I feel like we put too many labels on things. We, like, go too deep into saying, we're girlfriend, we're boyfriend, I'm going to see you tonight, like, call me on the phone, or like, we live together, do we not? Where do I live? What's my name? These are things that we insist upon telling each other, but we should be taking it easy. If I show up at your house at 3 a.m. after not seeing you for 2 years, you should take me in, because that love is still alive and still there.
Wow, this sounds like it got super personal super fast.
No. I want to share. It's part of this personalness that made The Disaster Artist a Golden Globe winning film.
I mean, the winners aren't out. It's definitely nominated.
It's a shoe thing. It's a shoe-in. It's a shoe thing.
Okay. Definitely a shoe thing.
Copyright.
Okay.
James Franco.
Definitely. So, you've been getting a lot of accolades about your nominations and stuff.
Thank you.
What's keeping you grounded recently?
Well, you know, I collect butterflies.
You collect butterflies?
Uh-huh. What I do is I go out during my lunchtime, whatever I happen to be working on at the time, whether it's one of my art installations or a movie, I take a lunch break, I have a big net, and I walk out to the bushes and I just kind of swish it through the bushes. And you know, every couple of days there will be a butterfly in there.
Really?
I press it in a book.
Wait, you killed the butterfly just there and then?
No. I keep it alive, take it inside, then I kill it. I press it inside Harry Potter number 5, and then I display it in my home. I have a room filled with butterflies.
Wait, you press the butterfly? I thought that was just like for flowers.
Oh, you can press anything in a big enough book.
Yeah, but doesn't it like squish? Because like they've got like innards and stuff.
Yeah, that is a problem. I can't read Harry Potter 5 anymore. Sadly.
It's just got bug guts all over?
Bug guts everywhere. And it's disgusting, but it keeps me humble and it keeps me grounded. And I like to think about, like, how easily life can be taken away and how these beautiful things were just flying around one moment until sad fate, unavoidable, murdered them.
Do you have a favorite butterfly?
Yes, the monarch butterfly.
Oh, the monarch butterfly?
That's right. It's the king of butterflies.
Okay.
You can't go wrong with the classics.
I know they're seasonal. That's another thing is I know butterflies make a migration down to, like, Mexico and warmer climates once it gets cold up here.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do when the butterflies aren't around?
I just spend more time in the butterfly room. That actually happens to be the room where Seth Rogen comes when he's living at my house.
No, he sleeps in the butterfly room?
He sleeps in the butterfly room, yeah. It's just the two of us. We like to look around the butterflies. We sing our little butterfly song. You know,
is there a word for a butterfly collector? I feel like there's a specific term. Like, an ornithologist studies birds. Mm-hmm. What studies butterflies?
There's no word for that.
There's no word for that?
No, no word for that. It's very strange. I wish there was.
You know, it feels like there should be a word for that.
I wish there was, but there's simply not. Okay. And I've kind of, it's a point of pride amongst collectors now.
Now, you like butterflies. How do you feel about moths?
You know, I respect them like I respect an art that I'm not a part of. You know, like I make movies, other people make paintings, and I do that too. And other people might breed horses, and yes, I also breed horses. But people who do art that I don't do, like people who sculpt, I actually do sculpt, so that's not a good example. People who write music, like I've been known to do from time to time, not a great example. People who do performance art in the street, like wear strange clothes and talk about the government loudly to no one in particular. That I've only done a few times, but yeah. I'm very well versed in it. If there were to be an art that I didn't do, I would respect art, moths. Okay. In that way.
I'm a big fan of the Luna moth. It's a very beautiful looking thing. I've actually, I think I found one once. They're big.
How big?
It's like the size of like a sandwich, you know?
Oh, listen, what kind of sandwich? You gotta tell me.
I'm talking
like, I'm hungry for some moths.
No, I would not eat a moth. I've never eaten bugs. Have you eaten bugs?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I eat a bunch of bugs.
Yeah?
I don't eat butterflies.
You don't need the butterflies. No, you gotta save those.
Yeah.
What bugs have you eaten?
Well, when I was filming 127 hours, you know I go method for most of my movies. And what did he eat during those 127 hours? Nothing but bugs.
Wait, he did. I've never actually watched the movie. Sorry.
That's okay. I haven't either. I just acted
it. Yeah. It's. You hear a movie called 127 hours. You're like, even if it's half that time, it's still really long.
That is exactly how I felt filming it. You know, they kept me on set for 127 straight hours. They edited it down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I ate a lot of bugs during that time.
Yeah, no, and you had to like cut off your own arm and that's.
I tried to really do it.
Yeah, I
went method.
I would not suggest that. I
mean, they kept telling me they don't people. Aaron, you are a true artist, so yeah, I know you understand.
Oh yeah.
But a lot of the people I worked with on 127 hours, they didn't get my process. Like, they kept telling me stuff like, he didn't actually eat bugs, that's not in the book. He cut off his own arm, but you don't have to. They didn't understand when I tried to cut off my own arm. They didn't understand when I took out my bag of crickets that I bought at PetSmart earlier that day and tried to ingest them one by one.
I mean, crickets supposed to be high in protein, you know? There's a lot of cultures that eat crickets.
Thank you, yes. Yes.
Now, you speak about being method.
Right.
In The Disaster Artist, you very much embody Tommy as a person. What did you have to do to become Tommy Wiseau?
That's a great question. I actually went to his home, and I mind-melded with him, like the Vulcans in Star Trek.
Oh.
Yeah, and, you know, I was doubtful just like you, but it seemed like something Tommy was open to, and...
You all right there?
I'm so sorry. That was just an echo of my former self before the mind meld coming through.
Totally understandable.
Yeah. Yeah, I put my finger on his forehead and my thumb just below his chin, as a Vulcan did. And in that moment, we became one.
How did Tommy feel about that?
He loved it. Yeah. I got the impression he did it all the time.
Okay. I mean, he shows up in the film, so I'm sure, like, any part of being a part of the production, he probably was grateful about.
He's been surprisingly open about it. Quite frankly, can I just say this? Yeah. Off the record. This part's off the record, okay? No one listen. Stop listening. I'm really surprised how much he's liked this movie. A lot of people kind of think it's making fun of him, but he seems totally game. This man has a great sense of humor about certain things and not about others.
How old were you when you first saw The Room?
I was in my early 30s. So The Room came out in 2005. I believe, the early 2000s.
Yes.
So sometime around then.
Yeah. So you saw right when it, like, came out?
Oh, I see almost every movie as quickly as I can.
That seems exhausting. There's so many movies out there.
I gotta see him. I'm an artist of all types and trades.
Like, just on Netflix alone, like, I can't imagine watching all those movies.
Well, here, say a movie, and I'll tell you my review of it. My one-sentence review, and then the letter grade. I've seen nearly all of them.
Christmas Prince.
B+.
B+.
That guy was handsome, but kind of creepy.
Okay, Coco.
A++. I have never felt more good about any movie in my entire life, period.
Bright.
I haven't seen it, and I never will.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's my one.
What?
I get to choose one movie a year that I'm never seeing.
Okay, any particular reason why Bright?
It's written by a sexual predator.
Max Landis?
That's the one.
Not a fan?
Not a fan of Max Landis. It's a shame, too, because I want to watch Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, but he was behind that as well, and I think people forget that.
Yeah, no, he causes quite a stir. He still has, like, more movies coming out. I don't know why he hasn't been blacklisted. I was thinking of having him come on the show, but,
Don't do that.
Now don't give a voice to him. Now that you bring him up like this, it is a little, problematic.
He's a bad guy. And you know what? It's not just the sexual predator stuff. That's the worst of it. But also, he unties people's shoes beneath tables when he's eating dinner with them.
Wait, is this an actual thing he does?
This is a thing that he does. I had dinner with him once. This was before I learned about his sordid past. And he waited until I was looking away, and he bent beneath the table, and he untied both of my shoes.
Really?
He'll do it to you, too. He'll do it to anyone.
Now I really want him on the show just to ask him why he does that.
It's some sort of sick perversion.
I don't know. I like the movie Chronicle. The movie Chronicle was good.
I never saw that one.
Yeah, it was Michael B. Jordan.
That's the one where they are telekinetic, right?
Yeah, and there's like it's like Dane DeHaan's only good movie.
I haven't seen.
Oh, do you know who Dane DeHaan is though, right?
No.
Did you see what's that movie that came out this year? The Luc Besson movie.
Luc Besson movie. That must have been my movie from last year that I've never seen.
No, it came out this past summer.
I don't believe you.
Yeah, it did. Maybe. It was Valerian.
Oh, right. Yes. I saw it 4 times in theaters. You know what I think?
What was your grade for Valerian?
Solid B, got a bad rap. Great visual effects and a charming story.
Yeah, no, people's complaint was that the actors didn't have chemistry. How do you get your actors to, like, work well together?
Well, what I do is before we start shooting, I go to each of their houses and I perform a Vulcan mind meld on them. I put my thumb right beneath their jaw and my 4 fingers right above their temple, and we become one in that moment. And then, you know, we all seem to get... I'm sorry.
Yeah, the little former self there again?
Yeah, it's always trying to reassert itself, take prominence.
Wow. You've gotten a lot of criticism recently about casting just your, like, friends and family in your movies. Like...
Dave
and Alison Brie, his wife.
Yeah.
And obviously Seth, you know.
Who's like a brother to me, almost a husband. He lives in my butterfly room.
He does. But you have another brother.
That's true. Yeah. What about him?
Tom Franco.
Yeah.
Why hasn't he been in any of your films?
He's
an actor, apparently. He's been in one film.
That's right.
He's been in a horror film. Why is he not getting any attention?
I think he should be a veterinarian.
You think he should be a veterinarian?
Yeah, he wants to go the actor route. The route that I went. The route that Dave went. And he's a fine actor, but you should have seen this guy when he was coming up through school. Everyone was saying it. They were saying, shit, this kid's made to be a veterinarian. You put a dog in the room with this guy, and it's like, it feels better just by being in his presence. One time he, went to a veterinary clinic, and people in the waiting room were asking advice about their pets, their kittens.
Because he just looks like a vet?
He looks like a vet. He's got that whole, his hair is going back. It's very short cropped and gray. It looks kind of rough, like the hair of a Labrador. And he's, kind of gruff, but in a way that you know would be, good with a pet, you know, like a mountain man who's good with animals. Anyway, Tom, he's made to be a veterinarian, and it's just kind of sad that he's wasting
them. Did he ask you to be in The Disaster Artist?
Many times. Many, many times. And I told him, Tom, I'll let you be in The Disaster Artist, but only if you allow me to write in a scene where a character is the best veterinarian in the world.
And I don't know how that would have fit into the plot.
Well, it would have been a stretch, and he knew that, because he's not an idiot. really, it was just my sort of passive-aggressive way of saying, Tom, come to terms with yourself. You were made to be a veterinarian.
What's Dave's opinion on this?
Oh, Dave agrees.
Dave agrees?
Everyone who knows Tom agrees. This man was, I mean, this man is vet 100%. We all know those people who are made to be
What are the holidays like when you guys get together as a family and Tom's there? Like, does he, like, just keep to himself? Or does he, like, try to suggest things and then you and your brother have to be like,
You know, I would say it's a little awkward when it comes to talking about acting, and it's clear that he wants to be a part of it, but, sorry. But at the end of the day, like, I think that the holidays are about more than just our careers. We settle down, we play Boggle, it's our favorite game as a family, mm-hmm. and we kind of forget about all those business things.
Well, that sounds really nice.
Yeah.
So... you have a great career, have you?
Thank you.
Yes. Already accomplished so much.
That's true.
Including teaching. You tend to teach a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You've taught at, like, several colleges. Even your old high school you went back and taught at.
That's right.
What is there that James Franco can't do?
What is there that James Franco can't do? That is a great question. I will say this. There are a lot of things that I used to be not so great at, but through perseverance and a lot of hard work, I've managed to become good at almost everything, with the exception of growing almonds. I'm not great at growing almonds, try as I might. And I haven't given up yet. The day might still come when I manage to figure out the formula. But I grow almonds on the windowsill of my New York apartment. Maybe it's the dust in there?
Don't they grow on trees? I thought almonds grew on trees. They're like
a tree. I have like a what are those tiny little trees from Japan?
Bonsai tree?
Bonsai. I have a bonsai almond tree that's sitting on the windowsill of my New York apartment. And I've been cultivating it carefully for about 7 years now. Mm-hmm. And it grows almonds. It successfully bears fruit, but they taste awful.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, there probably needs, like, more space. Also, New York air is probably not the best for growing things.
I'm gonna crack the code. I'm gonna crack the code.
So, you live in New York and mm-hmm. you have a place in L.A.
That's right.
Okay. Which do you prefer?
The place in L.A., for sure. 100%.
That's the one, the butterfly room?
Yeah, that is the one with the butterfly room. Seth lives out there, so I really miss him when I'm here in New York. I sing the butterfly song every night, regardless, but without Seth.
You ever FaceTime him and sing the butterfly song?
Yeah, but it's not the same. It's not the same. Do you want to hear a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to hear the butterfly song.
Great. Just so you know, this is written in the language of butterflies.
They have a language?
They do. Okay. It's something that you come to learn when you're a butterfly collector, which, of course, there is no name for. Okay, here we go.
All right. Well, that was moving, I'd have to say.
It's very nice of you to say.
I've never experienced anything like that before. All right, with your permission, I'd like to move on to a couple
You have my permission.
I have some speed rounds.
Mm.
Basically,
great.
Play a couple games.
Got it.
First game is, we're going to play the game Fuck, Marry, Kill. You familiar with it?
Very familiar.
Okay. Well.
Very familiar.
Well, I'm excited then. The first name is your friend who lives in your butterfly room, Mr. Seth Rogen.
Ah. This is going to be hard, I can tell already.
Second name, Paul Rudd,
an actor you've
worked with many times.
Another close friend, that's right.
And third one is another actor you've worked with, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Ah, my best friend in the entire world.
What, over Seth?
Yes, but, you know, in that way that's like, we'll never quite be able to be as close because I love him so much unabashedly. Okay, let me think. I would say marry Seth, fuck Joseph, and I hate to say it, but kill Pauly Boy.
No, that sounds so... that's sad.
If there was an option that I could just chill, if it was Mary Fuck Chill, mm-hmm. that's what I would do with Paul, but sadly that's not the game.
Yeah. No, I notice a lot of your friends, like, hang out in the same circle. I was thinking of putting Jason Segel on there. Or, you know, the granddaddy of all of you. Or Judd Apatow, I was thinking of putting on there.
Fuck Judd Apatow. I would have killed him for sure.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
He gave you your start.
No, fuck that guy.
Really?
He just puts on a camera and he tells us to do our thing. We improvise the entire fucking movie. And then he gets some sort of credit for being an auteur. You know, it doesn't take an auteur to set up a camera on two funny people and let them be funny, Judd. All right.
What was it like? He's in your film, The Disaster Artist. He has a little scene. What was it like to direct him?
It was great. You know what I did for him? I set up a camera and I said, Judd, make it fucking work. And I let him figure it out. And if you go back and watch that movie, I think it shows that it's the worst scene in the movie because Judd doesn't know what he's doing. He's not an actor. He's barely a director. And I'm just going to say it right now. He deserves to die. More than anyone in Hollywood. More than Weinstein. More than Max Landis. More than anyone. He's the worst guy in Hollywood. And I'll say this now. This is maybe the worst thing he does. He unties people's shoes. He unties their shoes when they're not looking. When
Judd Apatow too?
Yeah, Judd Apatow and Max Landis. They both do this. It's a Hollywood epidemic. Because you know why? They have power. And they know no one's going to call them on it. And it's about time that we got to the bottom of this epidemic. And we start saying, if you untie people's shoes beneath the table, you shouldn't be working in Hollywood anymore. Anyway, kill Judd Apatow.
Okay. Good to know.
Thank you. Are we still doing Marry, Fuck, Kill?
No, we're on to word association.
Got it.
So I'm going to say a word. You tell me the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Fame.
Joy.
Fortune.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Weed.
Paragliding.
Love.
Sex.
Movies.
Sculpture.
Star.
Star Wars.
Film.
Barry.
Oscar.
Oscar.
Family.
Oscar.
Butterfly.
Oscar.
All right. Well, that's about all we have time for today, James.
I
want to thank you for coming out here. It's been great to have you on the show. Is there anything you want to say to our listeners before you head out?
Yeah, just one thing.
Right, hold on to yourself there.
Aaron.
Yeah?
This is the real James Franco. I've been taken over by a demon. He Vulcan mind melts. He just wants an Oscar. He'll do anything. All right. Sorry about that. I blacked out for a second there. This has been great. Aaron, thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Thank you again for listening to the Yes and I Am podcast. This podcast has been completely improvised, so instead of having the real James Franco here, it has been my buddy Colin Gossel. How's it going?
Heyo, it's going good. I'm surprised, after listening to that first half, people are not going to believe it's improvised.
You knew a surprising amount about James Franco.
Well, I don't know if you could tell by my impression, but I'm a huge James Franco fan. No, yeah, that was the worst impression I've ever done.
I don't know. I mean,
just nasal. It was just
I know he laughs a lot. He has that kind of chuckle.
He goes like, or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I remembered that, but I couldn't do it. Anyway, I'm so sorry, James.
No, it was funny. I almost let it slip earlier when I was talking to you about Jason Segel. I was like, oh, he's part of that Freaks and Geeks crap. Mm. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to let him know that he's playing James Franco yet. You did a great job of blending that cough in there.
Yeah, I made it work because there was no other choice.
All right, so what do you got going on in the city? What have you been working on?
Oh my gosh, what a party 2017 has been for a Colin Gossel comedian. I'd say if you are a fan of improv comedy, I perform every Tuesday night at the Magnet Theater with the musical improv team Snacks. We improvise musicals completely off the top of our head. All the music, all the words, everything.
Now, is it a complete show, or is it different, scenes to, musical? Like, Are you, like, doing a beginning, middle, and end to your thing?
Yeah, it's a full narrative show. And I get the feeling that from your question, it's like that's something that people have wondered to you aloud in the past. But yeah, we make up a full story that every individual team only does a 30-minute musical. So you'll see us do like a complete story in 30 minutes with a beginning, a middle, and an end. Mm-hmm. If you stay all night, you'll see seven other teams do the same thing.
Wait, seven teams?
Yeah, eight teams every Tuesday night.
Wait, how many hours is that?
That's 4 hours, because we're all doing a half hour.
Oh, 4 hour show.
Yeah, most people don't stay for all of it. But if you're going to come and see Snacks. It's really an amazing thing.
Yeah, no. So what time does that start?
It starts at 7 p.m. every mm-hmm. Tuesday night. The teams, like, rotate and change. Like, okay. Tonight, actually, today happens to be a Tuesday. If all of you listening, this is on a Tuesday. And so I'm going up at 8 tonight. Next week, I'll be at 9. It goes on a week-to-week basis. And it's really nice because, like, even if there's a person who can only make it at 7, you're going to get a new team with different funny people. There's so many talented people at the Magnet Theater.
Yeah.
Really can't plug it enough.
Yeah. Michael Bird.
On my team. Yeah. On Snacks.
Been on the show. It's our Ed Sheeran episode.
That's a really good episode, everyone. Look it up, and then you'll see Mike.
It's titled Motivational Speaking, which is...
That's so great for him.
No, it's bad, because I feel like the reason why it has so many listens is that people looked up motivational speaking.
And
on,
it popped up.
Because there's, like, international listeners to that episode.
Oh,
and I'm, like, thinking, like, oh, no, someone in Australia thinks they're going to get, like... some, like, real motivational speaking, and they're getting my silly comedy show.
I think that there's nothing more motivational than Michael Bird improvising. Something beautiful about what he does.
There is.
Anyway.
But, yeah, anyways, do you have any places that people can find you?
Yeah. Check me out online. Your prime location for all Colin Gossel media has got to be ColinGossel.com. You can see some videos of me doing stand-up. Links to my podcast, which I haven't plugged yet, but hey, it's coming up.
You have a podcast?
I do have a podcast. It's actually, this podcast is winding down. It's called Hopelessly Excited, and we're just about to put out, like, our last episode. So this might not be where you want to jump on the
they
train.
You can go through
the back episodes, yeah. And it's like every episode is me with a guest doing something that we're very excited about, like an activity. But I'm about to start up a new podcast with a close friend and one of the best comedians in the city, Brandon Zellman. I only wish that I had recorded this podcast 2 weeks later, because we're just about to, like, upload our first episode in just a little bit. But
but people can keep a lookout for it.
Keep a lookout for this. It's called Who's That Pokemon? me and Brandon Zellman, one of the best comedians in the city, we are breaking down every Pokemon in the canon, one by one.
The original 151.
That's right. Episode 1, Bulbasaur. Episode 2, Ivysaur. Episode 3, Venusaur.
You're going through the evolutions.
That's right.
How long are the episodes?
45 minutes.
Of just Bulbasaur?
That's right. If you are a Pokemon fan, this is the podcast for you. If you're not a Pokemon fan, but you're a comedy fan, I have faith that you're going to like it.
Is it family friendly?
I'm not sure yet. So far, yes, but I don't want to close the door on some very explicit
episodes. I was about to say, my nephew loves Pokemon, but if it gets adult...
I would say maybe if your nephew is above 10 years old, it's probably fine for him.
He's turning 8.
He's still
a little too young.
We have discussed... never mind. We were thinking about doing a hot or not segment for Pokemon.
Okay.
And that might be a little too risque for an 8-year-old.
Yeah, Mr. Mime is a little too sexy.
Listen, I think Mr. Mime is hot. That's my take on Mr. Mime.
What about Jinx?
Jinx? I say hot. Most of the time, the Pokemon are hot.
Jinx,
I like a Pokemon.
Jinx is a minstrel character.
Is she really? Oh, never mind. Not hot.
No, but think about it.
I guess now that you say that, I can see it. I really hope that's not what they had in mind when they did that. All right, I guess not hot. If it's minstrel, not hot. There's nothing hot about blackface.
All right, well, keep a lookout for Who's That Pokemon. Mm-hmm. Thank you again, Colin, for coming out here. It has been a lot of fun. You guys are listening. I would like to thank our theme music. It's done by the artist Regulus. You can find them on SoundCloud. Also, if you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review our podcast on iTunes because it helps us with visibility, helps more people find the show, and that keeps us happy. Also, you can find us on Instagram. We're at YesAndIAm, and we'll post some fun pictures that relate to our episodes and maybe a little behind the scenes. A lot of great content for you guys to find. So thank you again for listening, and we will see you all next time.